I did get barbecue, the most expensive barbecue of my life.
Where'd you go?
Jack Terry's or whatever.
Terry Black?
Yeah, I've heard of that. That place is
a, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That place is an institution.
Yep.
Yeah. So I went to Terry Black's. Yeah, that thing cost so much. That was,
you got to order everything by the pound. There's
I
no
know.
Order of. It's like, oh, I guess I'll have a quarter of a pound of everything.
And once it's already on your tray, it's like, well, shit. Okay, here's my credit card. Welcome to Three Idiots and a Lawyer, episode 110. And Syracuse is off to a great start to the football season. Matt Pfeiffer here, along with Joe Schell and Kevin O'Keefe. Syracuse wins big, 65-0 over Colgate. Joe, you and I picked big lopsided wins last week. It ended up being more lopsided than we had guessed. Garrett Schrader went off 18 of 24, 257 yards, 4 touchdowns. The most yardage ever by Syracuse football in a game, 677 total yards, 406 in the air, 271 on the ground. This was just a story of a complete mismatch. It's hard to pull too much out of games like this, but I think one of the things that you can take a lot of is how many receivers they went to and how many different looks Syracuse was using. That was something that the broadcast team was talking about that they were impressed with. And that depth that we were talking about seemed to be showing. Let's see, 10 different receivers caught the ball. That's good, even against the Colgate. That shows that you're maybe not going to rely too much on a Ronde and you're going to spread it around.
I hope so. That would be nice. Last season, it felt like Ronde was the only guy capable of catching a pass. So it was good to see them split it, you know, much more evenly. I think actually Hatcher was the one who had the most catches and yards. I think Gadsden only had a handful, you know, 6 or so for 57, I think it was.
Yep.
But
Hatcher was the only one over 100 yards. Hatcher had 105. Yeah.
So I was actually at the game and I just happened to be walking past the south end zone. When that throw to Ronde Gadsden happened, and it was just like the perfect timing. And then on the way back, I was hoping for another amazing touchdown. And that's when Schrader threw the interception. And I was just like, all right, I'm one for two.
And everyone's like, Kevin, sit down.
Yeah, it was rough, but you know, well attended. Nice to see fans show up for Colgate. I remember in my time as a student or any time recently where we've had a 4 o'clock game, it's a very rare time for Syracuse to play. And it's a very friendly time to, you know, get a fan base to show up for a game like Colgate. I mean, it was well attended under the circumstances.
You can do something in the morning. You can even do something in the early afternoon, roll in there, see the game. And you can grab dinner after the game, right?
Exactly.
You can go to Tully's and get some tenders post-game. If you'd like to use that as promotion for us or as promotion for you and sponsor us, feel free.
Hey, if you play your cards right, 4 o'clock or this week, 3:30, you can get some noontime tenders. You can get some dinnertime tenders. You can sandwich some Tully's right around that football game.
Absolutely. Joe, you know, what were your thoughts on this one? You know, I know we talked about it a little, not much before. We were kind of doing the whole season last week, but what were your first thoughts seeing Syracuse this
year? Yeah, you know, obviously grains of salt with this. There's only so much you can take from it, but there are a few things to keep in mind. One is that Colgate's not a terrible FCS program. They're okay. So it's not like this is the biggest cupcake we've played in years. It's better than Wagner.
Yeah.
They're better than Wagner. They're better than when we've played Rhode Island. They're better than when we've played Albany. So they're not, it's not like this is the easiest FCS team we've scheduled. They're decent. And to be able to still, as you said, throw out the most yardage in school history, to score the most points in the Dino Babers era, which, you know, even considering that we've scheduled some real cupcakes, even bigger than Colgate. So to be able to put out a performance like that, just for a confidence, from a confidence standpoint for the players and for the fans to be able to see the depth, see who's on the team, you really get to dig down into that depth chart and see who's going to play this year. And I think wide receivers behind Gadsden who are going to play, I think that's still very much up for grabs. I think that's kind of what this was an audition for a lot of these guys. You have a few mainstays that you know you're going to see. You're going to see Alford, you're going to see Jones. But Hatcher probably put himself in a position to see a lot of snaps against Western Michigan now. And he could very well put himself in a position to earn more playing time. And that's something that we need, as Matt and I talked about last week, that Schrader's been searching for those secondary targets, and someone needs to step up behind Gadsden. And one of these guys that, after Hatcher's breakout performance, he could be the guy. And we really got to see the depth of the roster, which is something that even in years past in our easy FCS games, you didn't quite see this much depth, this much talented depth. You really saw that in the defense. They rotated a lot of guys in and out on defense, and obviously there was a physical mismatch, but the linebackers played really well. Marlo Wax is so far looking like he's going to live up to be that next star, and that leader on the defense, stepping up in, you know, Michael Jones's old role. So that's reassuring. And it's just, at the end of the day, it is what it was supposed to be. It was kind of best case scenario. You shut out an opponent, which is never easy no matter who they are.
Yep.
And I guess the last thing would be you saw the quarterback depth. Again, we're playing Colgate, but Del Rio Wilson looked poised. He looked a little more relaxed and under control than what we saw last year. He's got a good arm.
I don't care if it's Colgate or not. 10 of 13 for 149 yards and 3 touchdowns is nothing to sneeze at.
So I think my biggest takeaway is just to see who the other guys in the team are and to see them play well in a warm-up game. And there's no negatives right now. You know, the turnovers, I guess you could scoff at a little bit. Turning the ball over 3 times isn't.
But two of those were late. Those were late with guys that probably aren't going to be your starters.
Yeah, so. You'd like to see Schrader not throw up that ball in that situation, but we'll blame Kevin walking by for that one. And
I don't know.
What can you say? You know, it was all good. Is a ton of offense.
I really wanted to see Davis get a couple more opportunities. I don't even think he put the ball in the air once.
He wasn't allowed to throw the ball. They sent him out there and they said, you are not throwing the ball. And then what? He tried to make something happen one time. And then he fumbled.
Yeah. It was such a sad play too. It was like one of those, not like, like almost like a Mark Sanchez butt fumble. Like it's just like missed. He was sort of disoriented. And then, you know, he took a weird step back and it was just awkward. And then the ball just fell out. It was a bummer, but I don't know. I'd like to see a little more of him, but Del Rio Wilson looked adequate, but I just don't know how much we were really able to gain in terms of understanding of who this team is and whether or not we're going to be better or not, better or worse than last year. But having said that, 65 is nothing. Like, I don't think we've done that in the last 20 years, right?
We had 62 in the 1 year. We had 62.
We can flip to the defensive side of the ball whenever you guys want, but it's no small feat.
I will say this. There are years, and Joe alluded to it, where we did not, even if the score looked good, we didn't perform as well against the FCS team.
Remember the Villanova game? I mean, that's not a fair comparison because Villanova is actually one of the best FCS programs, but we almost lost.
Yeah. Villanova, we had to go to overtime to beat them. And the one that I was thinking of is 2019 when we played Holy Cross. And although we scored, I think we won like 41-3 or 41-7 or something like that, you saw Holy Cross consistently getting through the offensive line and chasing our quarterback around at that time in 2019. And that was kind of signs of trouble to come. And we saw that trouble metastasize through the season against tougher competition. when Syracuse handles its business the way it did Saturday and it did last year against Wagner and the way it did in 2018 against Wagner, we've generally seen those teams perform better against the FBS.
There's no red flags so far, and that's really all you can ask for at this point.
Exactly.
We could point to a few on the O-line. There were some miscues, some weird penalties.
Seven penalties for 60 yards. You're not going to be able to do that.
A lot of movement up front, a lot of missed coverages on the offensive line. Schrader was kind of left. I mean, if it wasn't Colgate, I think Schrader would have had a lot more of a tough day.
He probably had to scramble more than they would have liked in this game.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if that is a first game sloppiness or if that's the sign of a bigger problem.
The shuffling on the O-line is something we talked about last week, and I think you can probably chalk a lot of it up to that, and that's something that you hope they can settle in, and you see a lot of that go away. I think a lot of the penalties were very early, and then as the game went on, they seemed to settle in, and it became less of an issue, but
yeah,
we've been talking about penalties and hoping they settle in and become a more disciplined team for, 7 years?
Yeah. I'll also give you one more number that the other concerning number other than the penalties, third downs, 9 of 16. Mm. That's not great. That's, I don't know how many of those were later in the game. Perhaps that probably some of those third downs are later in the game, but I think we
punted on the first drive, and then I'm not sure we had a fourth down until.
Yeah, we only punted once, I think.
Okay. All right.
And it was a great punt.
Well, that's good.
Which, when's the last time you said that? There's another positive.
Doesn't
matter who you're playing. I mean, a punt is a punt. A punt is a punt.
Absolutely. So let's flip to the defensive side. Obviously, Syracuse blanked them. An FCS squad has not scored on Syracuse since 2021 now. So there's that. A lot of guys had good days. We could see a lot of depth there. Syracuse handled its business. I mean, you held Colgate to 106 yards, 52 passing, 54 on the ground. That ground number is going to be important. We'll get to why in a little bit when we talk about the game we got coming up. But that's what you wanted to see from the mob, as they call themselves. They were getting in the backfield. They were getting pressure, and they stopped Colgate dead in their tracks.
Yeah, I like the defensive culture that we're building, even with the loss of a couple of high profile corners and some other defensive players via the transfer portal. It's nice to see that we've kind of created a little bit of an identity as a defensive powerhouse in the ACC, and I think that's paying some dividends when it comes to recruiting. So we got a lot of new talent. That's pretty exciting. You saw it up front, right? I mean, the defensive line played about as well as I've seen them play. It's an FCS school, but still. Colgate was not able to get past the line I don't think I saw them get out in open space more than once or twice. But they were getting jammed to the line every time. And, I actually, what was interesting to see us run some press coverage, I don't know if that's just an inferior opponent and seeing what you can get away with, because we don't typically do that. But seeing a little bit of, man-to-man press coverage on these receivers kind of opened up a whole new side of things that we don't typically see as Syracuse. It may very well be that Dino's finally got the right guys in the right places, so he's able to open up the playbook a little bit.
Well, that comes back to something that I've been saying, and that is that Dino seems to be very good at the portal. Last year was disappointing in terms of high school recruits, but the portal Dino's been using really, really well. And he's using it to get the talent that maybe we don't always get out of high school, but we get guys that also have college experience. Right. And they come in with that, and sometimes coming from a more difficult place, perhaps, and it pays off for us.
right now your quarterback room is three guys that were good enough to be recruited by and commit to SEC schools.
Yeah. Yeah. And that tells you that right there. Let's do stars and demerits for the Colgate game. So I'll go ahead. I'll give a star to Amari Hatcher. Four receptions, 105 yards, and a touchdown, leading the way for the receivers. Great game from Amari. Kevin.
My star goes, I think I did this last year during 1 week when I first saw Trevor Peña. But I'm actually going to give my star to DeMarcus Adams in that he's not, I don't really know how much experience he has as a return man, but he sort of slid into the role and he looked good. And, you know, he wasn't too stupid, right? He made a couple of like weird moves and, you know, backtracked, or he maybe fielded a few punts that he shouldn't have. But by and large, he was, you know, creating a net positive. It'll be interesting to see what happens when Peña gets back. Because, I mean, I would just assume use Peña a little bit on the offense and leave the special teams work and the punt returning to Adams. So I'm really rooting for him. I think maybe my star is more me rooting for him to take over the role so that we can use Peña elsewhere. Because I don't know how severe the injury is, but I think he's due back in the next few weeks.
Peña also always scares the living hell out of me back there because he sometimes fumbles like deep in our own territory, trying to make something out of nothing. And
so, right. Yeah. And just for fun, my demerit goes to Deuce Chestnut, who really stunk up the place in the second half. Against Florida State.
He had a pick, though, didn't he?
He had a pick in the first half.
But then he got blown up the rest of the game.
Are you guys familiar with this guy, Keon Coleman, for Florida State?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Him and Jordan Travis just made them look silly.
And that's who Deuce was trying to cover most of the game?
Yeah, so he scored three touchdowns. I mean, he's got probably 5 or 6 inches on Deuce. Height wise, but the guy's just so lengthy. I'm really not looking forward to playing Florida State after seeing that game. It's gonna be a tough one. If those who are listening didn't see, they dismantled LSU 45-24, I think.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a game after the end of the third. Yeah. And a lot of that had to do with the Travis to Coleman hookup with Deuce Chestnut right there in the middle. So, I mean, yeah, he had a pick in the first half, but it was kind of one of those, like, you know, he was jamming him at the line and then the ball just kind of fell and he happens to have pretty good hands. So he managed to grab it. I mean, to his credit, like, he did what he could, but, you know, I stand by it. I think he would have gotten just as much notoriety and ability to be drafted if he was just an exceptional corner at Syracuse as opposed to a replaceable run-of-the-mill corner at LSU, because you know they have like an infinite amount of talent behind him. So in the event that he continues to struggle, he's not guaranteed to keep that job.
And we can get him back next year.
Deuce, if you want to come back, we'd love to have you.
Yeah. Okay, Joe.
I'm going to go ahead and give a demerit to DeMarcus Adams. I think that was some of the most irresponsible punt returning I've ever seen in my life.
It was fun, though.
It was a lot of fun, but it's not the fact that he showed poor discretion. He showed no discretion whatsoever. And I think against anybody else, that would have backfired at least twice, probably three times.
He ran backwards like 20 yards one time, didn't
he? Yeah, and you know, it worked a couple of times, and I like that. But I think I'm hoping that was just him saying, like, hey, it's Colgate, screw it, let's go have fun. I might not have this job all year, then fine. But if he comes out and is still the punt returner against Western Michigan and does the same thing, he's going to fumble three times.
Yeah, wow.
And yeah, he's an electric player, and if they talk to him about that, and I agree with Kevin. I think he seems a little more dynamic than what Peña has shown us. But I will say Pena's had his chance to be a part of the offense, and he hasn't done much with it. He just isn't a great receiver. And ironically, to Matt's point, he didn't seem to have great hands when they would let him play as part of the offense.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's that might be part of the reason he's kind of been a career special teamer. But yeah, the kid was electric. I just, holy moly, he's got to think a
little. Calm down.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
But I will. Did we give a star to Matt? You gave a star to Umari Hatcher. I'm going to give a star to Marlo Wax. He went out there and did what he was supposed to. He led the defense, played well. I think he's poised to have a great year.
Yeah. One more guy that we should mention. You know, we talked about Schrader's numbers, but let's give one to LaQuinn Allen, too. 16 carries for 107 yards, average 6.7 a carry and a touchdown. That's good to see. And
Jack Stonehouse.
Yeah.
A competent punt.
Yes. Okay. Let's
give that man the Heisman Trophy.
Let's look forward. Western Michigan Broncos come to Central New York this weekend, 4 p.m. kick on ESPN Plus. Hopefully you don't have Spectrum like I do. And because there's that whole thing right now with Spectrum and ESPN and Disney, and it's a mess. Anyway, Western Michigan will come to the Dome.
Wait, so are you going to miss out? Or are you going to have to find the game elsewhere?
Yes.
Matt's cable company has not negotiated a contract
with Disney. So on Thursday night, the first regular night of college football season, ESPN turned off.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That's a lot of leverage. Yeah. And also, if you're in the tennis, the U.S. Open tennis, it's bad. Both sides seem to be very entrenched. Doesn't seem like it's going anywhere soon. So I may be changing. I may be cutting the cable and switching to either YouTube TV or Hulu TV or something because, you know, college football season's 3 months, and I'm not waiting for them to figure this out. Anyway, enough about my personal cable and television decisions. If you have thoughts, feel free to drop them on our Facebook, Three Idiots and a Lawyer, or tweet us at 3IAPod. I don't even know if I can say tweet anymore. X us. But that sounds dirty.
It doesn't work as a verb as well, does it?
Yes. Anyway, so Western Michigan's going to come in with one win. They won last Thursday night, 35-17 versus their FCS opponent, St. Francis of Pennsylvania. This is not the Western Michigan that Syracuse faced in 2018 and 19. Remember, we started that 10-3 season on the road at Western Michigan in 2018 and had a real game with them until mid-late third quarter. And in 2019, when I was on a bus going from vineyard to vineyard with Kevin and Kyra, Syracuse was playing Western Michigan that day in 2019 and got into a shootout. This is not that Western Michigan. Tim Lester is no longer the head coach at Western Michigan. And a lot of people hit the portal. Basically, their whole offensive line. You look at the preseason predictions, they were basically between 125th and 130th in the country, where people were generally putting them. As you can see, it wasn't necessarily an impressive win for them over an FCS opponent. Jack Salopik is their quarterback. He was 18 of 26 for 170 yards, one touchdown, an interception. He was only sacked once. Here's the part where I did say the running defense is going to be important. Jalen Buckley, 30 carries for 194 yards, 6.5 average and a touchdown. And Zahira Abdus-Salam, 20 carries for 73 yards and a touchdown. So they're going to look at trying to run the ball. This is where it's going to be really important for that defensive front to step up. They did spread the ball out to some different receivers. You've got Kenneth Womack and Jelani Galloway, each had 4 receptions, but Womack, the only one over 50 yards. Everybody else was 30 yards or less. Malik Dudin, 2 receptions for 24. And then Blake Bozema had 2 receptions for 20. So this is a team that Syracuse should beat. We'll see. I mean, I think this is a week where I'm really looking at I want to see Syracuse do more of that, getting it, spreading it around the different players. I want to see that defense face an FBS offense. And I want to, you know, see that we're not going to do any silly mistakes or that, we're not going to have Schrader on the run. But if this game goes right, we should be able to once again get the backup quarterback in, get the backups in. You know, I think that would be the best case scenario. I want to see Del Rio Wilson in the second half again.
For
and
sure.
I think we should be able to do that.
Yep. You know, you just want to see them kind of take the Colgate game and carry a lot of it over. You want to see not the same level of control of the game, but you still want to see a dominant performance. You want to see Schrader stay clean and stay on his feet. You want to see Syracuse control the game in the trenches on both sides of the ball. You don't want to see any turnovers that we give up, and you want to see us creating turnovers. If we can do that and watch Carlos Del Rio Wilson play in the fourth quarter, I think we'll be optimistic going into our next game.
Yeah. It's your final tune-up before things get really real in 2 weeks against Purdue.
You have to take care of business against Kevin's second least favorite directional Michigan school.
Yes.
Why is that?
Because Central Michigan is your least favorite directional Michigan. Because that's your
are there only two directional Michigan universities?
There's Eastern Michigan,
Central, and Western Michigan. And Central Michigan,
I think Eastern and Western are tied, right? It's just
now we play Central, Western Michigan more.
I'm over the late hit with their
No, you can't be.
No. I mean, what was that? 2018?
2017 or 2016, 2017, I think.
Yeah.
Eric Dungy would have been Super Bowl MVP this year if it weren't for that play.
Yeah, well, if you want to chalk his injury history up to the what was it, Mitch
Stanicek.
Oh, Stanicek. Yep. Wherever you are, Mitch, you're welcome to come on the podcast and we can have some words.
Enemy of the podcast. I think we've done this already.
I've grown soft in my 30s now. I was once out for blood on this topic, but
he's less angry at people who are now Kevin's, in their early to mid 20s.
Kevin's an adult now. He can't wish violence upon young people anymore.
Yes. Yeah. I guess I can still hold the grudge against Stanicek because he's probably about our age, maybe a few years younger, but
he's selling used cars somewhere.
I'm sure he is.
I can't wait till Mitch Stanicek ends up in the halls of like Congress as like a staffer and introduces himself unexpectedly to Kevin at some meeting. And Kevin, you just see Kevin get red and see smoke start coming out of his ears.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
He just tackles.
Hey, used car salesman sometimes translates to member of Congress. So,
right,
what he's doing. I don't know if that was just you speculating or that's actually what he's doing.
Yeah, I'm speculating. I got no idea what he does. I just think it would be funny if you just randomly ran into him in your regular career.
Yeah, well, if that day comes, I'll be sure to pull on Zencaster and we can have a quick, 5 minute reaction pod.
All right. So you have any things that you'd like to see this weekend from the Orange, Kevin?
Yeah, I think Joe kind of summed it up nicely. Don't make mistakes and force them to make them. Maybe run the football a good amount. Get Allen some more carries. He looked really good on Saturday. I want to see some more of that and protect Schrader at all costs, right? We can't. I mean, sure, like Del Rio Wilson might be ready for next year, but I think Schrader we need to keep him in bubble wrap. So keep him healthy, keep him in the pocket as much as you can. And when he leaves the pocket, make it intentional on his terms so that he's not taking any Eric Dungy like Mitch Stanicek hits that kind of derail the season.
At least he won't dive head first the way Dungy would.
God bless. Garrett Schrader knows how to slide. Thank the Lord.
I will say this. I thought this was an interesting point. If people wanted to know why Garrett Schrader did come in the second half, they said that the team wanted to test to see if his shoulder that they had done surgery on in the offseason, if it would stiffen up after halftime. It did not. So that's a good sign. And he was throwing just fine in the second half. So I'm sure you'll see him far more in the second half here, but they just wanted to get him in, to just see how that would feel after 20 minutes of not doing anything. So good sign. Good to see. Let's take our picks for this one. I'll go ahead first here. I think Syracuse is going to take care of business. I'm going to say 38-10 Orange roll in this one over Western Michigan.
I had 37-13 in my head, so we're kind of at the same point.
Same spot. All right, Kevin.
Well, I'll be the Brett. 24-20
Oh my god.
Oh my god, I don't know what I would do. I hope not.
It's gonna be an unexpected nail biter, and we're gonna have to have a little bit of introspection in between week. I don't know. Somebody's got to, you know, like wherever Brett is right now, probably sleeping.
He's smiling somewhere.
Someone needs to be the Brett every once in a while, you know.
Every week we've got to have somebody just do a dreadful pick. And that was it.
Yeah, just like an ice cold water.
Three, you know, touchdowns. Oh. Three touchdowns.
Joe and I are thinking in our head what that would look like right now. We need a minute.
But the problem is you've seen that movie before.
I know we have.
That's Garrett Schrader's on the run. He's trying to make something happen. They try to swat the ball out. They hit him right on his surgically repaired elbow. He's out after the first drive. Carlos Del Rio Wilson throws three interceptions. It's like we win, but it's pretty much a loss.
DeMarcus Adams just tries to Heisman his way to the end zone 15 times, fumbles it on the one, and he scores three touchdowns for the other team on his own account. So
he runs backwards and he commits three safeties.
Yeah.
Oh God.
It could happen. It could happen.
I know. That's the worst. But
the most important thing is that we go into the ACC schedule with two wins, which is, you know, yeah. And I really hope that doesn't happen, but I just, you know, figured I'd tip the cap to Brett.
Wow. Okay.
Because, you know, Brett's nodding, you know, like he's like, oh yeah, we're gonna be all high and mighty on the 65-0.
Oh man, I don't know if even Brett would go that close. Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to move to other scores. Let's talk about what Syracuse's opponents did. So, as I mentioned, Western Michigan got things started off to a win. Purdue, the opponent in 2 weeks, dropped a surprise to Fresno State, 39-35. Tough thing for Purdue there is they paid Fresno State $1.3 million to come to West Lafayette to do that to them. That was a pay game. And let me be clear, Fresno State is a pretty good team. They had a good team last year. Not really who I consider. Let's put it this way. I would not be happy if Syracuse paid Fresno State to come. That would not be what I'd call a good pay game. And Fresno State handled business there in West Lafayette. Yeah, this is a Purdue team, new quarterback, new coach. But there were a lot of pieces yet back, and people were thinking that Purdue – could be a kind of surprisingly better than people expected. This is not a good start to that campaign. We'll have to see if they can pull things together in the next 2 weeks. Army loses on the road at Louisiana Monroe, 17-13. Not a good start for the Black Knights, who are shifting their offense to a shotgun. I know. Army playing the shotgun, that's going to take them a while to get used to because they haven't done that in, I don't know if ever. But not a good start. Louisiana Monroe, you're a Louisiana man there, Kevin. Not too good of a football program.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with Monroe. That's the far north.
Yeah, all right. So here's the shocker of the ACC this week. Ninth-ranked Clemson getting absolutely drubbed by Duke, 28-7 in Durham. Good news, folks. Syracuse does not have to play Duke this year. Duke was 9-5 last year, so this maybe shouldn't be as much of a surprise as people thought, but it's the way it happened. Clemson, two fumbles inside the five, a turnover, two blocked field goals, just messy and sloppy. And there's going to be a question. Is this a sign of a bigger problem, out of some of the issues we saw with Clemson the past 2 years, only maybe worse? Or is this just week one sloppiness? It's hard to tell.
Dabo's not really adapting to the current landscape of the game. You know, for all the credit we give Dino for the way he uses the portal, Clemson's program's kind of gone the opposite way, where they lose some guys to the portal. They don't bring in a whole lot from the portal. Obviously, their high school recruiting situation is very, very different than ours, but they're not really one of the teams that's using that to their advantage, and they tend to lose guys more than they bring them in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this wasn't only the surprise of the first weekend of the ACC. I'd actually think that's the biggest upset of the weekend.
Yeah, the conference just went from having two national title contenders to one.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, Clemson's got Charleston Southern this week, then they play Florida Atlantic, and then they've got Florida State coming to Clemson, and I'll tell you, the way they looked, I mean, that's not going to go well if they're still like that. I'm sure they'll be better. I don't think that I expect them to be as sloppy, but, you know, and then they got Syracuse the week after, and the way, you know, we'll see how Syracuse goes, but very possible that Clemson walks into the dome 2-2. And
Wait. So Clemson is going to get drubbed by Florida State, and then they get to come ruin our homecoming the next week?
Well, that's possible. Or they played a physical game and they're down, and maybe Syracuse takes advantage of the opportunity. Who knows? There's not a completely crazy possibility that Clemson could be 2-3 on October 1st. I'm not saying that's likely, but I'm saying it's definitely possible after what we saw last night. On the other hand, Dino's it could due. Be 3-2. He is due.
Dino is due. How many times have we come this close to, you know, a
every amazing game except for 2019? Every game except for 2017, they did it. 2018 came down to the last minute. 2019 was the blowout. 2020, they played into the fourth quarter. 2021, field goal at the end of the game. Syracuse lost on a field goal as time expired. Last year, they gave up the touchdown with like less than a minute to go. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's 3 minutes of game time, and it's three more W's for Syracuse, basically. Or three less minutes of game time, and Syracuse would have had like three more wins. Yeah, against Clemson. So,
Here's to hoping that this is finally the year that we get out of the bad habit of playing up to our opponents, but also down to our opponents, and actually just, you know, putting our best performance on the field every single week, no matter who we're playing.
Yeah. 21st ranked North Carolina, they win versus South Carolina in Charlotte, 31-17. South Carolina is supposed to be a decent team in the SEC East this year. That's a good win for the UNC Tar Heels, and that proves to me that UNC is for real and might actually now be the second best team in the ACC. Number 8, Florida State. Kevin already mentioned this, 45-24, just rolled over 5th-ranked LSU. Even came back from being behind and rolled. Florida State, I thought they would be a playoff contender before season. I feel vindicated in that. I think Florida State's going to run the table. I'll say it. I think they're going to run the table, and I think they're going to the playoff. I'll just say it now. I hope they don't, but I'd love to see Syracuse beat them down there, but I don't think we're going to. Virginia Tech, 36-17 over Old Dominion. Old Dominion's given Virginia Tech some problems in the last few years. That's a good win for the Hokies, and I think that's more points than people might have expected to see the Hokies put up. You know, Virginia Tech's offense has been struggling pretty hard the past couple years. That's a good win for them. Boston College, the disappointment of the week for the ACC. 27-24 loss to Northern Illinois in overtime. Northern Illinois is not the Northern Illinois of about 10 years ago that went to the Orange Bowl. This is more of a team that's kind of expected to be near the mid to bottom of the MAC. Not a good look for Boston College there in a year where they're trying to turn things around. It's basically a must-make-a-bowl year for their coach. Pitt, 45-7 over their FCS opponent, Wofford. Georgia Tech fell 34-39 versus Louisville. Syracuse does not play Louisville this year, but they do play Georgia Tech, second to last game of the season. I'll tell you, Yellow Jackets put up points, which is not surprising. They have been getting a little better second half of last year putting up points. And then Wake Forest, 37-17 over Elon, their FCS opponent. Dave Clawson, never count out his team. They look good. to start the season. So, guys, a good week overall for the ACC. You know, the only problem for the conference as a whole is that Clemson lost. While we're on the topic of the ACC, before we go, we've got to talk about the elephant in the room again. Conference expansion. What's the ACC going to look like? On Friday, the ACC was very good at making sure that its conference expansion was completely covered up by the first weekend of college football. You know, if you're going to make news, try to do it when there's not other things going on. But indeed, Friday morning, the ACC voted to add Stanford, Cal, and SMU starting in 2024. The flip vote was indeed NC State, which will make for some very interesting conference expansion politics in the future. If UNC,
so NC State and UNC ended up voting differently.
Yes. Which to me says NC State thinks it needs to make the ACC survive and UNC thinks it needs to find the exits. So that also to me says UNC isn't going to feel obliged to drag NC State with them to any future home. So I think that's an interesting, that's just kind of my reading, the political reading of that. Florida State, Clemson, the other two no votes, but everybody else voted 12 votes in favor of adding those three schools. So positives, you know, that Syracuse's athletic director talked about, there's big Syracuse alumni associations in the San Francisco Bay Area and in Dallas and in Texas. So it will give an opportunity for those alumni bases to see them up close. Obviously, we've talked kind of about the silliness of flying Olympic sports all the way across the United States and how demanding that's going to be for athletes who are trying to study and everything like that. But I'm going to be honest. I don't think the ACC had any choice. I think they had to add these three schools. You expand or die.
Yeah. Stop me if you guys already hit this topic ad nauseum. But to me, it seems like a bit of an arms race, right, between especially the ACC and the Big 12. And I think the Pac-12 ceases to exist. I mean,
they've
already seen the writing on the wall.
Two stragglers.
They've already had a couple of, but I guess for this year, they still have
they'll
the automatic
exist for this season, yes.
But then I suppose for next season, they'll do an automatic updating of the policies, even though the college football playoff contract lasts another couple of years.
Playoff committee already met. It'll go down to the four auto bids from the ACC, Big 12, Big 10, SEC. Then you'll have the best of the group of five. And then you'll just have seven at-large bids instead of six.
Right. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, we did talk about this some last week, and you're absolutely right. It is an arms race. And the Big 10 and the SEC are going to win that race. And the Big 12 was trying real hard to be number three. ACC was moving a little slow. My honest opinion at this point, if I'm the ACC, go grab Wazoo and Oregon State. Give Stanford and Cal some friends out there so that you don't have all this crazy travel. And while you're at it, go grab San Diego State. I think at this point, the ACC survival is adding. Now, the problem is getting those 12 votes. You saw it took a month, basically, to get the votes necessary to add Stanford, Cal, and SMU. Stanford and Cal are giving up some of the contract money. SMU is not getting TV money for 7 years, right? Like in order to be part. So, I mean, they would have to demand a lot. But I'll be honest, Wazoo and Oregon State, basically, you could probably demand almost anything. Because they'd probably rather be in the ACC than the Mountain West, which looks like where they're going to end up.
Yeah, it's the strange times we live in. It's I never thought it would. You could kind of see the writing on the wall that something like this was happening. I just didn't think it was going to happen this quickly. It seems like overnight it just started. You know, the Pac-12. Sort of just collapsed in and of itself. And the SEC and the Big Ten kind of established themselves as the, you know, perennial college football conferences. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but it kind of, you know, it doesn't sit very. I'm gonna sound like the old guy in the room whenever I'm talking about the old days where there used to be this conference called the Big East, and there were all these powerhouse basketball schools that were all part of it, and there was this historic rivalry between Syracuse and Georgetown, and we actually named our conferences after geographic, you know, areas as opposed to whoever wants to join our club. I mean, it's for recruiting and for a whole other slew of reasons. And
it's for money.
I think you mentioned the weird idea of flying Syracuse to California 2 to 3 times a year, or I guess it would be 2 times a year if we played both Cal and Stanford.
But, well, you would never play them both on the road in the same year. I'd almost guarantee they'll arrange that.
Yeah.
You'll never both on the road in the same year.
I mean, just there's a certain charm to the geographic centers of the different conferences, and you know, it's a shame to see that kind of go by the wayside. But like you said, it's add other programs or die.
You know, at this point, I mean, I think this has been a slow moving train accident. We've seen it coming. Let's be honest here. The Big Ten and the SEC won 10 years ago. And it was just a matter of waiting till their next move. And they waited for the TV deals. And when they added USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington, that was it for the Pac-12. And as for the SEC, they're adding Oklahoma, Texas. Eventually, I think everybody knows they're looking at Clemson and Florida State. It would be common sense, and possibly Miami as well. And it is pretty – the rumors are that the Big Ten's eyeing North Carolina and Virginia. The ACC is going to probably – you know, depending on how this grant of rights goes and the litigation over it that probably will come soon, the ACC is going to get picked over. And the ACC it's either going to be the pieces left or it's going to get picked all apart. I mean, Joe can tell you, I even had a theory, you know, Syracuse could end up in the remainders of the ACC, the most likely scenario, or they could end up in some amalgam of basically the old Big East, probably not very likely, but potential. And I even threw in a scenario that when you think about it, they could end up in like the Big 12. If the Big 12, in caring about basketball, decides that they want New York and wants to hold their basketball tournament in New York City, and they need the connection to New York, and they're playing this geography.
Would UConn be more desirable for them in that regard?
What?
I think UConn might be more desirable to them in that regard.
UConn brings better here's the thing, right? UConn brings better basketball history, for sure, in terms of national titles. But they don't bring you some of the other sport. They don't bring you football as much, although they would probably improve joining the Big 12. And Syracuse still is a name brand a bit that still might get pulled in because UConn still isn't in New York. It's closer to New York. That's true.
Market-wise, though, they kind of are treated as if they have that market.
Yeah. Well, and they do to a point. I mean – but everybody has a piece of the New York market. You know, this whole, Syracuse, New York, Rutgers, New York, Connecticut, New York. Look, every team has New York because New York has so many expats from everywhere else. There's only
one New York's college team, though.
Thank God we dropped that.
St. John's.
Oh, yeah. Remember when everybody was trying to get on that? Buffalo and St. John's got really mad about that. Look, at the end of the day, I think I'm throwing out all those options because all those options could happen. I still think the most likely thing is Syracuse just remains in whatever the ACC is or whatever the remainders of the ACC is whenever this is done. And I still think it's going to be 2 to 3 conferences kind of split away in football.
Is there any reality where we join the Big Ten, or
absolutely
would they never be interested?
Oh, I don't think so. The SEC.
I don't think we add anything to the Big Ten. We don't add anything. They already have that region of the country with Penn State and Rutgers and Ohio State. They don't need New York. And the truth is Syracuse is not an AAU institution. Every Big Ten school is an AAU institution. Nancy Kanner pulled us out of the AAU. So on that front, we don't fit them either. The only way we end up in the Big Ten is if the Big Ten goes on a massive, like, aims to go to 30, right? Like 30 or 32, because then you can kind of double up on places, right? You could go add Syracuse, and you could go add Pitt, and it's not like you're adding, you know, it doesn't matter that you already have teams in those areas. I don't really see that happening
and
yet.
You have tiers. You have 10 team tiers, A, B, C, and like the worse you finish, you get relegated to B, and then if you win B, you move up to A.
I mean,
so kind of like the Premier League.
Exactly.
It wouldn't be the worst. It wouldn't be the worst scenario to do that way, but I don't know. It's going to be weird. I actually had this fantastic theory. If you had a 28 team conference, you play one, right? You split into, hear me out here, right? You have four divisions of seven. You play the six in your division. You play one out of conference the first week. You play one each from the other three divisions. That gets you to 10 games. Then what you do is you take the best division champion, the worst division champion, the second best division champion, and the third best division champion, and then they play each other in the 11th week of the season. And then the winners play the winners, and the losers play the losers. And you do that all the way down through the one, you know, the one seeds, two seeds, all the way down through the seven seeds. You would guarantee competitive games all the way through the conference, the last 2 weeks of the regular season. You'd have flex scheduling. You might not have the hottest teams around in the SEC or the Big Ten, but you know what you would have? You would have an in the regular season playoff built in, and guaranteed the last 2 weeks of the season have good football, and TV would pay attention.
You heard it here first.
Call it in.
I mean, hire me now. I'll save the ACC. Florida State and Clemson won't like me, but that doesn't matter.
Trust me, Matt, they already don't.
Well, that's all I we have for episode 110 of Three Idiots and a Lawyer. Enjoy the football this weekend. If you have the 1990 NCAA Lacrosse Trophy, let us know. We just want to know that it is safe. Follow us on X at 3ILPod. God, I hate saying that. I basically even quit that thing because it was just getting stupid on there. But we'll post on there, at least on our corporate account or whatever we want to call it, our corporate X. And then we do have a Facebook. That's normal, so maybe you should engage with us more on Facebook. Three Idiots and a Lawyer on Facebook. Look for us. We post all our shows there. Engage with us. Tell us what you think about a 28 team conference, four divisions of seven. Tell us what you think about the Western Michigan game or the Colgate game, whatever. That's all we have for episode 110. Like I said, you got that 1990 NCAA Lacrosse Trophy. Let us know. We just want to know it's safe. For Joe Schell, Kevin O'Keefe, I'm Matt Pfeiffer. We'll see you next week.